Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast, episode 177. And I'm joined here with my good friend, Tony DiPreto. And of course, Tony, we have sad news today. Sad news.
Yes, we do. And this isn't, I know Patrick and I joke around sometimes, but this is real.
Yeah. Kobe Bryant, NBA legend, has passed away in a helicopter accident today. And four other people, one of which was his daughter, I believe, was involved in the crash, and there were no survivors. So it is, if you're an NBA fan or just, you know, he seemed to be a really good guy, and it's just a shame for him and his family and the people who are involved with him, with the Lakers organization and beyond. So it's kind of sad.
Yeah, it's not fake news, people. This is real.
Not fake. Yeah. Ugh. Oh man. But that's,
well, thanks. The podcast is over.
That's right. I'm all done.
Introduced finished. Morose topic, so it's over now.
The only way we can go here is how Russia's going to
hack
the 2020.
I mean, you're a basketball fan, though.
I am. I am.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what, you know, like, Patrick's a basketball fan, and so this is, you know, when stuff like this happens, we've talked about this kind of stuff before.
Yeah, and when we were overseas, when I was in high school and in college, I was a big college basketball fan because it was covered so well, and there were so many games, and it was always available. But when you go overseas, college basketball is hardly covered at all. But NBA is covered actually quite well overseas, just about everywhere. And,
yeah.
And so I became kind of more of an NBA fan, and I got to watch, you know, Kobe and kind of at his prime, and it was exciting. And whether you hated him or loved him, you know, this is certainly a tragic end for him that you wouldn't wish upon him.
His family.
Yeah. So it's terrible.
Horrible.
But anyway, we'll get past it. We'll soldier on. Tony is going to be ranting about some vendors. I can't wait. I can't, because I see the vendor name. Well, I see the product name on here, so I'm curious to see where this is going to go. We're going to talk about Microsoft's new Edge browser, which was not a surprise. Everybody knew it was coming. But what does this mean? We've got some predictions. But first, I want to talk about parent portals. Parent portals, Tony.
That's right.
I think a lot of schools struggle with this. So a parent portal is a place where parents can log in. They can see their child's or children's grades. They can see events that are happening at the school. If they're part of a parent organization, maybe there is a group on there where they can go and get information. Maybe if they have some fees they need to pay, whether they be lunch fees or printing fees or athletic fees or, you know, whatever, technology fees, whatever, they can go there and they can do these payments online. And so when I started my job here in Indianapolis a few years ago, one of the things was, how do we get the parents to use the portal more? And I've come up with two epiphanies, Tony. I came up with two epiphanies. Would you like to hear them?
Hit me.
All right. Number one, the portal is like an encyclopedia. It's not meant to be picked up every day and perused. It's just there when you need it. We shouldn't be expecting our parents logging into the portal every day to check news and everything like that. Maybe once a week. Or maybe if their child is struggling in a particular subject or in a particular class, the parent logs in more often. But if your child's doing okay, you don't need to log in all the time. You know, you just don't need to do it. It's just there as a reference. That's really kind of how it should be, how I think it should honestly be used. It's not like Engadget, where like I want to see what's happening in this world today, and you log on and there's 50 articles for you to peruse and look at. No, it's just there for kind of like a reference. So I was like, wow, I wonder how my son did on his history test last week. Let me check. And then they, my keyboard's quiet, so you can't hear it. And so he types on the keyboard, and they bring it up, and they're like, oh, my son got an A+. That's great. That's great. It's fantastic. That's what parent portals should be. They shouldn't be this thing that I think schools need to change kind of their expectation that parents need to be going to this all the time. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? And then I'll hit you with my second epiphany.
Well, I think that, you know, I've seen some parent portals that are, that have a mixture of public and private info. So if they have the public info, all the school news events, all that is on there. So parents are on there pretty regularly, but in order to get grades and stuff, they have to log in. So I think it really depends on the overall culture of the school and how they're using the, you know, the web pages. I have had, you know, I've worked at a school where the parents were on it all the time, re-referencing grades constantly. Like, they were literally logging in 3 or 4 days a week, and it didn't matter if there were grade updates or not. They were just on it all the time.
Wow.
And then we've had situations where we've looked at it as a tool for attendance issues, where we ask parents to sign up for notifications, and they log in whenever they get a notification. And some parent portals, you know, depending on what you're using, they come with apps, and those help with all the push notifications and stuff. But yeah, I think the biggest problem I've actually had is making sure the message is out there that we have one parent portal and not a bunch of different groups and stuff that people are kind of running ad hoc with information that's not correct. And I've had that issue too, where you find out a teacher set up like a Facebook group and they put all their parents in it. And that teacher is now responsible for giving the school's official information. And obviously they don't always do that, and they don't do it correctly. And I found that to be a big issue, like fragmented portals, like all these different groups with decentralized information.
Yeah, we did have a teacher who was using Seesaw. And Seesaw, for people who haven't used it, is actually a very good learning management system. And even though it is good, and it's probably better than what our learning management system is, it's included in our school information system, we asked her to stop using it. We weren't mean about it, but we were just like, look, this is where everybody goes. This is, it'd be different if you, and in fact, we even gave because it was for our early childhood, so preschool, pre-kindergarten, and kindergarten, we even gave the division, we're like, if you want to use this, that's fine, but everybody has to use it in this division. Or are we going to use the portal?
Right, you need something, because parents don't like fragmentation.
They hate it. They absolutely hate it.
The other thing, too, is you can always use the kind of like the Chewbacca defense on these type of employees. So I call it the Amazon argument. I'm like, have you ever ordered anything on Amazon? They're like, yeah. I'm like, what's Amazon's phone number? Can I just call them and order this? Oh, no, you have to go to the webpage. Oh, why do I have to do that? Why can't I call? Don't they have phones? Oh, yeah, they have phones. Well, why do I have to use the webpage? Oh, because that's, you know, they put everything on one place, Amazon.com, so you can order it. Oh, really? Do you think it's a good idea to have everything in one place? I just use that kind of argument. They can't win that argument, and then it's really easy to kind of refocus them, like, oh, right, everyone else does this in the entire world that is successful. Oh, right. So it kind of helps, you know, asking for that Amazon phone number to place orders. Hey, how can I call them?
Yeah, you can. No, forget it. That's great. That's a good one. I want to use that. And the other thing is, we want the parents to use it more often or what. And so it's like, how do we do that? And there's been kind of this push to offer professional development for parents. And we have a guide that we email out to every parent every year. And to new parents that come in before their child starts on child or children start on day one, they meet with the head of the school, the division head, and they sit down and they talk about, and they're like, the portal is very important. Make sure you're checking the portal. This is where all the information is. Here's what the portal looks like. And, you know, kind of guide them through that, which is really good. But the problem, I'm seeing is that the portal is used. Teachers use the portal differently. So from one class to another, or from one grade level to another, the portal is used and leveraged very differently, and so there's not a lot of consistency there. So you'll have some teachers that use the portal a lot, and there's a lot of information on there. And then you have some teachers who barely use the portal at all. The only thing that they use the portal for is to keep their grade book. And so there's no other notification or anything. There's just, oh, an assignment was added, and grades were added to that assignment, like, right away. That was it. So,
right.
So I think if we can build some consistency on what should go onto the portal, and that way parents say, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to get when I log in and I look at history, or I'm looking at PE, or I'm looking at art, or I'm looking at grade one, or I'm looking at grade five. And it won't be exactly the same, because there's different needs for each of those grades, but maybe there's some consistency, like, oh, it's going to look like this. Or I can expect to find what unit they're working on and what are they studying right there on the front page. But we have some people on their class page, they have nothing on the class page.
I think you have this argument all the time. I mean, you and I both work somewhere where there was a head of school that said, everybody is going to do this every 2 weeks, period.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, I remember that.
I mean, it was everyone's going to post grades regardless of age every 2 weeks. Period. Like, that was it. But if you don't have that, and a lot of schools don't, I believe at least it has to be at the grade level. So all grade six teachers, if you teach a grade six child, I don't care if you teach six, seven, and eight. If you teach a grade six child, every second Tuesday of the month, update your information. Whatever. Like, you've got to come up with some, like, agreement, and it needs to make sense to parents. So it could be grade level. It could be all middle school, all elementary, all lower. It could be all core subjects school-wide, and then another day all specials. But you've got to come up with an agreement, and the teachers have to participate. And then that way somebody can monitor it. It's really hard to monitor the content as well.
It really is, yeah.
You want teachers to have freedom to post, but then if you're going to let them post freely, you still need to check it. And being able to scan and check is awesome if you know when people are posting. But if you don't know when people are posting, then you have to scan and check every day. It's a really bad use of administrative time.
Yeah, yeah. I when I was doing my student teaching, this, you know, back in 1998, there's no portal, there's no, you know, internet in schools was very fledgling. And but I remember doing lesson plans, and all the teachers in the school had to leave their lesson plans on their desk on Friday afternoon, because the administration would go around, walk into everybody's room, and take a look to make sure that everybody had planned for the week before. They're like, oh, this person is going. And to me, that's kind of what the portal is. You know, that way administration, parents, they know what's coming up the next week. Oh, there's going to be two homework assignments. Okay, oh, Wednesday looks like a heavy day. It looks like there's lots of homework assignments for my child on Wednesday. I might want to, you know, we were going to go out to dinner that night. Maybe we're not going to go out to dinner that night, so we can have more time to work on it and just plan their week a little bit better. So, yeah, I don't know. I think if we have more consistency, parents will go on to it and use it a little bit more. And then if they go and they go into a parent conference and they're like, you know, I didn't know anything that was going on. They're like, well, geez, we've been checking the portal for this class, and the teacher's been doing a very good job of keeping it updated. And so how often do you go into the portal and check? And, well, no, I don't go in the portal. Well, the problem here then is not your child or the teacher or the school. It's you. It's you just not – we need – you know, you got to change that behavior. I don't know. It makes I think the parent – it takes some responsibility off the teacher's shoulders a little bit and puts it a little bit more onto the student and a little bit more onto the parent. You know, making that magic triangle of a team, you know. So, I don't know. Just some thoughts. I've got a post that I'm working on. It should be out sometime next week. And I could be wrong. I could be completely wrong about this. Who knows? It's you know, times change and people change. And Maybe nobody will want to even use something like this. They just want an online gradebook where they can just post assignments and let parents log in and see what assignments are coming up. Maybe that's all that parents really want. I don't know.
We'll see. You got to ask them, Patrick. Just ask them. Run a survey. You should run a survey and ask parents, you know, what they like, what they don't like.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. The hell
It'd be interesting to see because, you know, every school, like, this is the problem. When it comes to parents, I think every school is different. Yeah. I found that teenagers, for example, that I've worked with everywhere are almost exactly the same. But and even teachers that teach certain subjects I've found to be very similar. They would hate to know that. They would be like, "What? I'm not unique." No, you're kind of like the drama teacher at my other school. But I have found parents to be vastly different in their expectations. And even amongst a parent body, you know, it shifts depending on the parents coming in and out of the school. And so I think it would be – I think it's always worth, you know, occasionally taking the temperature of the parents and seeing what they like and what they don't like. And
yeah, I think I'll, you know, do that.
The worst, too, is if you've got parents who have kids in different schools – and they're like, "Oh, but, you know, at this school they have," and, you know, sometimes you have to say, "Well, I know this is a private school, but actually we keep our IT fees very low, and we're only spending like $200 a kid per year for IT here, but the school your other child's going to, it's like $600, and they actually have a lot more than we have." It's hard to equate schools, but parents don't see it like that. They're like, "Oh, kid A has this, kid B should have it."
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I think I'll do the survey.
Do it, Patrick.
What I think I'm going to find on the survey is that parents are not going to know what they want. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. You could just ask them to, like, try to find a way to, like, rate their, you know, maybe rate what you already have in terms of certain criteria. Like, first of all, you could ask them, you know, do you think it's user friendly, yes or no, just stuff like that. And what do you find the most useful, or what do you check the most often? Like, do you prefer to check it on your phone or on a laptop, that kind of thing.
Oh, Tony, I'm going to be helping you. You're going to be helping me make this survey. Be helping me make it.
No.
Yes.
Okay,
absolutely.
I'll help you.
But the good news is we can then roll it out for whatever school you want to. You can use the same thing.
How about we just make it and send it to as many schools as we can think of?
Oh, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, here we go. IT babble. It's big survey time.
Boom. Getting some big data. Yeah. It's just because we hear different things from ever since I've been here. It's only been 3 years, but I hear different things. They're like, "Man, I wish we would have all this information." And then I hear from the other parent of the same child being, "I'm getting too many emails. I'm getting way too much information. I need it to scale back. How can I scale it back?" And it's weird. So yeah. Anyhow. Okay. This is good. Tony, we'll work on this. This is going to be good stuff.
All right. Sweet.
All right. Now, Tony, tell me about vendors. Tell me how they make your heart burn.
Oh my God. All right. So, this week's been pretty bad for vendors. It's nearly impossible. I'm not going to mention any vendors' names, but this vendor would be very easy to figure out. Like, if you looked up where I worked, you could figure out this vendor, unfortunately. So I can't, and I'm not going to say anything, but it would be really clear to figure out who I'm talking about. It's just been a disaster. Like, these guys were... I'm new to the school. These guys made this plan with my school. They were going to move the student information system to a new hosting environment. I don't know why it has to happen right now, this time of year, but there was a decision made to do it well before I got to the school. And they're going through this whole thing like, "Oh, they can do, like, we can do this. We can migrate this many clients in a week. It's not a problem." The whole thing has basically been a disaster, and I don't even know if I'm legally allowed to go into all the details, to be honest with you, but I can tell you that, when I was in a meeting with the business manager and some other people, I'm like, here are some red flags. And in the future, you should be aware of these red flags. Number one, if there's a migration, meaning they're moving data from point A to point B, you should be given a playbook from the vendor. And that playbook should include everything you need to know, how to prepare your data, how to back it up, what you need to do to your network to get ready for this, what you need to do for your users, for their operating systems. There should be a guide from the vendor with a lot of details. They provided nothing. They just told us not to worry, that they would handle it. They didn't look at anything. They didn't look at our network configuration. They didn't compare us to other schools, and we were actually vastly different from everybody else they migrated because of our setup. So this company had encouraged over the last decade, their selling point, Patrick, was being able to highly customize. So that's their selling point.
Yeah.
And they're applying the same process to every single school, which doesn't even make sense at all. And the mistakes they were making were like Bush League. It's like, dudes, like, what is going on here? And I was just like, and then we're in these meetings with them where we're having to schedule the meetings, by the way. They're trying to avoid us. We're having to say every morning, 10 a.m., you will be on the phone. They, at one point, when we were like at zero operational functionality, zero, couldn't do anything, they did not respond to tech support tickets for 36 hours.
Oh, that's unacceptable.
And would not answer phones.
That is really unacceptable.
So my rant right now is just, these red flags, like, they, if you are working with a vendor and it's something core, I don't care if it's your business system, academic, or whatever, and you're making a big move, it shouldn't just be encouraging words. There should be a structure in place. There should be documentation. That's really all I can say, but it was very frustrating. And then on top of it, I'm reading through the tech director user group, and some people posted something back in June that we missed and we should have talked about. And it was about ManageBack. And this was another kind of vendor rant. But here's another red flag. Renewals. ManageBack was sending renewals, and the renewals that they were trying to get people to sign were for 3 years.
Okay.
But these schools had just been going year to year. And somebody noticed it in the paperwork, but it wasn't prominent. So they were trying to get schools to start buying into 3-year deals instead of their normal 1-year deal. And then initially refused to change it, but most of these schools were able to get them to change it to 1-year deals. ManageBack did not call anybody and say, hey, heads up, guys, we're really going to be pushing for 3-year deals. And that didn't happen. It came in a renewal document, like, terms of service. So, I've had issues with ManageBack in the past for certain things like this. It wasn't huge and they took care of it. But again, you love ManageBack. You think they're the center of your school. They don't care about you. I'm sorry. They don't. They want to grow. They want to make money. They don't want to have a bad relationship, but if they wanted to have an amazing relationship, they would have called everybody first.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I'll give you a quick story about our school information system is Blackboard, not Blackboard. And every year they send us just this, it's like a spreadsheet, and they're like, hey, here's what you're going to renew, and here's how much it costs. But there's no details. It's very vague. But we can call them on the phone. We can call them, and we're like, hey, we got the renewal. Can you tell me what this product is? Because I don't know what it is, and I don't know if we need it or not. And they will sit there and talk to us, and they've talked to us for 90 minutes at one point, like going through each product in detail with all the relevant people around who may be using said products. And then we can sit there and just look at each other and be like, okay, no, we're not going to do that. Can you remove that from our invoice and send us a new invoice? But they will do that. Like we can pick up the phone. We have a person to call. We have a person who handles our account, and we can pick up the phone and call them and get that answer like right there. You know, It's there's none of this. It's, you know, that sounds super shady, this whole manage back thing. Super shady.
Yeah, and again, they may have stopped it. This was back in June, but it was just something that kind of related to my experience this week. Excuse me. And, you know, like when I used to deal with PowerSchool, I was dealing with PowerSchool for about 6 years, and the salespeople were really straight up with me. So I would be like, okay, we're renewal time. They would do an audit. So they would send a full audit of what we're paying for, what our costs are going to be. And then they would want to set a phone call. And then we'd have the phone call, and the sales guy would be like, basically, if you do a 3-year deal, it's cheaper for you and it is better for me. Like, it's better for my numbers. My boss is happier. And you can do a 3-year deal, but actually pay for it over 3 years, meaning you can get the discount. Yeah. And still just make and still make an annual payment out of an annual budget. It's kind of a win-win, but he was honest. Like, he was honest about his motivation for selling the 3-year deal. I like that.
Yeah.
Personally, you know, it never ever came as like, oh, by the way, this is for 3 years. It never came like that.
Oh, super shady, man.
Yeah. Super shady. And, speaking of not shady, but crazy, is the final site. So I got this final site renewal, and it was for 5 years, and I called them and they're like, yeah, it's for 5 years. I'm like, can we just do 1 year? And she's like, no.
I was like, what? No.
She's like, we're really only doing 5-year deals right now. Now, I know I could push her to do, like, you know, less than five, but she's like, look, you don't want to do that. She's like, we're basically going to make it not worth your while to do it. And she said, you can actually pay for it every year for 5 years. I was like, oh, same as PowerSchool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she's like, no, we're doing 5-year pricing, and we're really not entertaining anything less. I was like, oh, all right. So they don't, like, again, they've had a meeting, and they're like, look, you know, for our private investors and everything, they want to see numbers. They want to see volume. Only sell 5-year contracts unless something happens and you really, really need permission to sell one less than 5 years. That's my theory. Nobody told me that, but I can just imagine it in my head.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
So, yeah, these vendors, man, like, don't fall in love with them. They just use their products, be friendly, work to get your best deal, work for that win-win for the school. And, you know, good salespeople want to make their numbers, and if you help them make their numbers, they are happier. But at the same time, if the company says we're raising prices, they're going to raise prices. They're not going to be like, you're a really good customer, we're going to keep it low for you. It's not going
to
happen.
And don't be afraid to negotiate and push back. We got a quote back. We're expanding our security camera system, and we got a quote back, and it was a little bit more than what we were expecting, and we didn't, for the next year's budget, and we didn't budget as much for it. And so I went to him and I said, look, we can stretch our budget, but here's where we are. Here's where we can probably stretch it. Can you meet us there? And I'm not asking him to, like, cut the quote 50% or anything like that, but, you know, it's something, it's, you know, it's realistic there. We're not the only people that I know of. Just with our research, there are other people who can come in and do exactly what they're going to do, and we might be able to get a deal. They might be able to cut us a better deal just to get start that relationship with us. So, yeah. I mean, these are nice people, too. I don't think they're trying to cheat us. It's just, you know, keep your school's interest in front of the handshake.
Absolutely. Your school's interests need to come first. And, you know, a lot, maybe you're a point person that works with a particular vendor, but it may be uncomfortable for you to change, but it could be really bad for everybody if you don't. And if you're a point person or an administrator, it's not really your job to stay comfortable yourself.
Yeah.
You know, if you're dealing with the student information system, that system is for teachers, students, and parents first. It's not for you to print reports. As somebody who does that professionally, you find a way to do it. That's your job. Like, you should have the skills to be able to find a workaround for almost anything, but you don't want teachers, students, and parents finding workarounds every day. You want them to be able to just use it.
No. Yeah, that's, so, yes. There you go.
So anyway, I'm not going to go off anymore because I don't really think I can, but it was at some points very insulting, you know, when people say stuff to you on the phone and you know it's not true and you're like, you're lying to me. Like, does that mean you think I'm stupid or like you have no respect? Because it's one of the other or both.
I hear you. I know when, so our school, they switched from Blackbaud to Blackbaud. So they hosted their own Blackbaud server on their premises. And then Blackbaud's like, you know, let's go into the cloud. It's a better system. It's everything. And here's our roadmap. Well, they had lied about the roadmap and there were certain features that were going to be in there that they have now backtracked on. And like, no, we're not going in that direction. We've changed. And that product isn't going to be developed as fully as we had told you it was going to be. And there are people on staff who feel, you know, a little bit betrayed by that. I totally get it. Totally get it, people. But then at the same time, we can always call them. We don't have to wait 36 hours for a response.
You know who you can't call, Patrick? You can't call Microsoft.
No, you cannot. There is no recourse. Oh, Microsoft. And they just released their brand new Edge browser, which is based on Chromium.
Yeah, so basically, let's just make this really clear. Microsoft just started using Chrome.
Yes, yes.
So Microsoft is like, okay, Chrome's the best, so we're just going to use it.
We're going to use it. And people might ask, well, why? Why not? But I think that they want to build their own Microsoft Chromebook. I think that's what they want to do.
I think you're right. And, you know, they have the Surface Go is kind of like a Chromebook.
It is. It's not super powerful. It's very, very portable. I think it's a 10-inch screen. But it still has its own operating system. But I think that they have the backbone now. They have Azure. Their web services, which are second to none, really.
Yeah.
So they definitely have the server power and capacity with which to pull this off, to where you have, you pretty much have like a slab, a screen with a keyboard and a trackpad, and you turn it on and it immediately connects to the internet and authenticates.
And they've been pushing starting last week. I started getting ads. They're not really ads. It's because I'm an Azure like administrator, but little, things like webinars and stuff for running Windows desktop virtually, which you can do with Amazon Workspaces, but they're pushing it like, forget about installing Windows, run it virtually.
And I've been hearing lots of rumors on ZDNet about believing this is where Microsoft is going to go in the next 5 years, to where...
Yeah, I've been going blue in the face too. I'm like, someone was asking me, they're like, are you sure Microsoft isn't going to make any more desktop software? I'm like... That's what it said in the email I got from Microsoft, that this was the last version.
Yeah.
And they're like, does that mean I really need to use my email in my browser? I'm like, yes. That's what it means, because they're not going to make your software anymore.
Yeah.
Microsoft's changing. Like, they're changing fast. For a company their size, they're changing fast.
It's staggering, actually.
I think in this case, education is going to be ahead of corporate, because if Microsoft offers products in the cloud and it's easy to deploy and not expensive, people in education will switch over to it. Yeah. And if you look at all the users that we have to support, like at my campus now that are on Windows, it's only like 20 people. So yeah, I would love them all to have virtual desktops.
Yeah.
They don't need Windows machines, and then we don't have to worry about ransomware. So, we're pretty set at that point. Whereas you've got a lot of corporations. I was looking last week. There are still people like feverishly trying to upgrade to Windows 10.
Oh yeah, from Windows 7.
Oh my God! Like, what is going on, guys? Like, you can't secure that stuff.
No.
It's too old.
And what a lot of people don't understand is that a Chromebook is the most secure. Maybe with the exception of Linux, but the most secure operating system you can run. More secure than iOS.
That is correct.
Because you can with a keyboard shortcut, you can just wipe it. Because there doesn't need to be anything on that machine. It just needs a base operating system so it can wipe itself, restore itself, and everything is good to go. And you can do that from a USB key or from from Google servers. And I think the Microsoft will, the Edge Book, if you will be able to do it. Or you just have a console that connects to the, you just have a laptop that connects to the internet, and it's all virtual. It's all virtualized.
Now, Google has their one-time fee for Chromebooks, and I heard that they're raising it by $8.
They have. This is true. Starting in May, it will go from $30 to $38. However, vendors can charge whatever they want for it.
Okay.
So for our last batch of Chromebooks that we got, we had three vendors that we were talking to, and we talked to them a couple times, and we got the price down to $25 for the license. And we got the price of the Chromebooks that we wanted as well.
I can see Microsoft really embracing that model as well. Like, where you pay they just want a license fee. That's really all they want.
Yeah. I just hope that they can get out of their own way. When it comes to Windows, there's like, oh, we have 18 versions of Windows.
That's
true. You know, just get out of the way and make one version, or, you know, maybe there's an enterprise version. Maybe there's an education version. And then if it's education, maybe charge for the licensing fee for the device, but allow people to get Office 365 for free. Don't charge for it at all.
Yeah, and that would be worth it.
Yeah, yeah. Because then you're getting users. That's what you want. You want users. You want people locked into that ecosystem going forward. And the professional world still uses Office and Microsoft, but education, heck, we can go either way. It won't matter to us.
And we've talked about this before. The only thing you really need is Excel.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
And Sheets is catching up, though. They have
Sheets is very good, yeah.
They've added a lot of features lately, but really the only thing you need is Excel. That's it.
That's the one thing. That's the one
thing. And we've even discussed that if we could just buy Excel properly, if we could just, like, if we could buy a full version of Excel that ran in the cloud and you could download and nothing else, I think we would do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It would work. We're a Google school, but we have five. Count them, ladies and gentlemen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Office 365 subscriptions. And that's for the three people in the business office who need Excel and the two people in our advancement. Well, there's more people in the advancement and alumni, but there are two people in particular who do lots of work with Excel, and they have Office 365. And it's those five people that have it, and that's it. Eventually, it'll expand over to when Office gets completely discontinued in 2024, I believe that is, you know, our head of school will get it, head of admissions will get it, and, you know, we'll expand that out a little bit, but it's just for Excel. That's it. It's just for Excel.
It's just for Excel. Like, it's the truth. So we were talking about this. I started this week. I got some information about the Chrome licensing, and I was like, oh, you know, I haven't really looked at some Chrome features lately. Like, I just haven't looked at new stuff. Yeah. And I had started noticing on my phone and on my browser, when I was signed in to Chrome as a user, I got this new option whenever I would right click a tab called send to your device. And it allows you to click on a tab and send it to another device that you're logged into. And that's actually kind of cool. It's, in a certain way, I would call it like asynchronous screen sharing, because let's say I was using an interactive screen that had built-in Android and I was signed into it. I could be on my laptop and the kids could be watching the screen. I could just throw up whatever tab I'm on the screen.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I don't know if that was intentional, but that's very similar to what you can do with some of these technologies like Apple Classroom.
Yeah.
And then I've used a couple times Remote Desktop for Chrome, which you can get at remotedesktop.google.com.
Yeah.
It actually lets you remote control a Chrome session. And again, I was thinking this could have, if it keeps getting developed, I think tools like this are really going to take Chrome to the next level, especially in the classroom. Like, if you can push content to the student's computer for free using like the built-in infrastructure and you don't have to buy something, I think it's going to be a game changer. So I'm seeing some of these features and they kind of look like beta features, but they're available for developers.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen with the next iteration of this stuff.
And for people out there going, man, that's the, you know, Go Guardian, which is a service we use, which is built for Chromebooks specifically. Teachers can do exactly what you're saying. And this is a company that has built all of this stuff based on the Chromium API. Like, they're like, oh, can it do this? Oh, we can do that with this. As long as we follow these secure guidelines, we can do that. Okay, let's do it. And so teachers can push out tabs to everybody in the classroom. In fact, they can even restrict. They're like, I only want you to have these three tabs open and nothing else. And that's what they can push, just those three tabs. And students can't open new tabs. They can't, if they close it, it opens right back up. It's pretty nice. It's pretty nice. Our teachers do like it.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, play around with Chrome. It grows every day. It actually expands like faster than you realize.
It does. And now one thing to be is that it moves really fast. Chrome, it gets developed very fast. And sometimes features go away from it.
Correct.
That's something like the apps that are on Chromebooks, those will eventually go away. They will disappear. I don't know what they're going to get replaced by or if they're going to get replaced at all. Maybe there'll be extensions. I don't know. But something to keep in mind. With Go Guardian, they used to have an ability to where you can monitor, like if a student had an app open, like their File Explorer, for example, on a Chromebook, you can open that. They would be able to see the File Explorer on the screen. Google has disabled that because Chromebooks have cameras, and in order to use a camera, you have to launch the camera app, which is creepy. So they didn't want kids, you know, students launching the app, doing something, and then teachers kind of tuning into it. They thought that might have been bad. So Google went ahead and disabled that feature. And so Go Guardian was like, oh, yeah, we don't have that anymore. So anyway, kind of thing. There you go. There you go. But anyway, Tony, that's all I've got. That's it.
That's all I've got to you.
Awesome. So that's good. That's a good show. So for the IT Babble podcast, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And keep on babbling out there, and we'll catch you on the next episode.